Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Deb Creer. Deb Creer is an entrepreneur. She's a cancer advocate and the visionary behind Trying Not to Die Live. With the background in communications, marketing, and public relations, she's navigated diverse roles from spearheading communication strategies for large corporations, small companies, and nonprofit organizations to founding her own marketing agency over 20 years ago. Diagnosed with stage 4 triple breast cancer in 2015 and thyroid cancer in 2023, she founded Try Not to Die Live in 2022. As a dynamic advocate and speaker, Deb passionately champions resilience, empowerment, and community building amid adversity, inspiring others to navigate the complexities of cancer with courage and power. Deb, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It is an absolute pleasure having you here today.
Oh, I am so honored to be your guest. Thank you so much.
Oh, you are welcome. And just a little background in terms of how Deb and I met, because I'm a firm believer that the universe puts people in our path that are meant to be in our path at the time that they're supposed to be in our path. And we met through a very, very good podcast agent by the name of Noemi Barris. And Noemi has referred individuals to me whom she thought would be a good fit for the Teaching Journeys podcast. And Noemi is one of those individuals that takes care with whom she refers. She's very conscious about making appropriate matches. So she introduced me to Deb. Deb and I had a pre-chat, and it was like, yeah, this is going to work. And so this is what's got us to this point. So that's how we got here.
We love it, and we love Noemi. She does take care of us.
Yes, she does. And I would highly recommend her services to anybody. Deb, my first question for you, and I know our listeners are going to be curious about this, is tell us about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your passions today.
Sure. Well, you know, it's very interesting how I got to, anyhow to me, you know, how I got to where I am. I worked for an oncologist and I worked for the American Cancer Society. And so I tell people, you know, I know just enough to be dangerous, right? And, you know, I'm an only child. I'm from a small mountain town in Colorado. All of these, you know, good fun things. But, you know, back in 2015, I did what you're supposed to do. I went in for my annual checkup and had my mammogram. And before I got home, they called and said, you need to come back. Now, like I said, I had a background enough to know that was not a good thing, right? It was, So I went back, did another mammogram. Turns out I had what they called microcalcifications. So little spots throughout my body. And they, you know, I, of course, go to Dr. Google, right? That's what we do. We go to Dr. Google and put it in and discover that most women of a certain age get those. It happens when the hormones change in our bodies. It's just kind of one of those things. But in a select special few, it starts turning into cancer. And so, but we weren't worried. You know, they said, stage zero. I didn't even get an oncologist. Kind of, you know, had a couple biopsies. Those came back negative. And then we decided, let's actually check the lymph nodes. And so went in and the doctor removed all the lymph nodes on my left side. And you know, one of the things that I discovered too is everybody has a different number. So she took out 14 and 8 of mine were positive. So more than half, which meant that the cancer had spread. I mean, that was not a good thing. So then we got real overexcited and, started really planning this. Met my oncologist, who I absolutely love, and which is one of the things that's very important. You know, if you're going to have medical care providers that are going to be in your life for more than the 10 minutes that you're in there, you better like them. And more importantly, you had better trust them. And, you know, and that's one of the things that I really tell people. But, you know, so we're going along and she said, you know, let's throw the kitchen sink at this. We need to hit this really hard. And so I had a chemo treatment that was 8 different drugs. 8. Took a little over 8 hours that day. I discovered that Jimmy John's will deliver lunch to an oncology center. And so, you know, I did fine. No issues. Halloween was in there. I gave out candy, you know, all sorts of things. And then several days later, started feeling a little puny, but I thought, well, you know, I just had all this stuff. I was running a fever. That's not abnormal. We reported into the oncologist and they said, watch it, you know, take Tylenol. That's what they all tell you, right? Take Tylenol. And then the pain hit and it was an unbelievable pain. And I knew that was not normal. Called the ambulance. They cart me off to the hospital and we're 5 minutes from the hospital. And I remember we stopped at one point and I am chatty Cathy all the time. So I'm talking to the paramedics and I said, well, why are we stopped? And they said, well, you know, it's a stoplight. And I said, I don't get lights and sirens. And that's the last thing I remember for hours. I crashed and I crashed hard. I ended up with a complication that people get less than 1% of the time. So again, have to be special. And what ended up happening was I went into septic shock. That, of course, is not good. The majority of people who get septic shock do not survive it. And so I did have emergency surgery that alleviated the problem, but, you know, had complication after complication, all sorts of things, spent 7 weeks in the hospital, multiple surgeries, multiple procedures. And finally went home, you know, and was going good. And we thought, well, I can't do chemo again. So I went ahead and had a double mastectomy. I had chosen to do both because I'm old and I didn't want to have to worry about this again. I also chose not to do reconstructive surgery. And we could talk a little bit about that later if you want. Because again, you know, I'm like, I'm old and I didn't want to mess with all of that. And it's my choice, right? And that's the important thing. It is what we want to do. So I, of course, got a complication from that surgery that my surgeon had never seen. I'm like, really? Can't I just be normal for once? Got that all straightened out. Actually tried chemo again, had the exact same reaction, ended up back in the hospital. So yeah, chemo is now out. I mean, that is just, I'm never going to be able to do chemo. But went along, you know, for quite a long time. Had to deal, and I'm still dealing with the after effects of having septic shock. It has damaged parts of my body. My kidneys are, you know, not happy little campers, all sorts of things. But, you know, I just kept working this whole time. I tell people hospitals have good Wi-Fi, so I just kept going right along, you know, partway through this. Now, I do, because I could not take chemo, and being HER2 positive, typically what they do is they give you a drug called Herceptin. And what HER2 positive means is cancer cells will multiply more quickly. And so Herceptin basically turns that off. But it's an incredibly strong drug that has some pretty nasty side effects. And so you normally just take it for a year. Well, hadn't affected me and I'm still on it. So I've been taking it, you know, 7 years, more than 7 years. I go in every 3 weeks. They hook me up. I have a port in my shoulder. It takes 30 minutes. It takes me longer to drive there. I'm doing that and we'll do that until they say no. But, in amongst all of this, I did tell my doctor at one point, I said, I got this spot. And it was this little spot on my arm. Well, it turned out it was skin cancer, but it was, you know, if you have to get skin cancer, it was the good kind. It was basal cell carcinoma. And so they just, you know, burned it off and that was that. And then last year, I told him, I said, you know, I got this pain And so we did a CAT scan, and it turned out that where the pain was something totally unrelated and not anything to be worried about. But it was one of those things where they discovered something else. And they said, hey, you've got lesions on your thyroid. A couple more tests later, they said, you've got thyroid cancer. So last summer, I had my thyroid gland removed, had the entire gland removed. It did damage my vocal cords, which they all think is absolutely hilarious. And I'm like, but no further, complications from that. But that was surgical procedure number 33 in this whole mess. I just keep going. And so as part of that, I was told by my business coach that I didn't go through this to not use it to help others. So that's when we started trying not to die.live.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking to myself, sometimes it's not all that great to be special either. You know what I mean?
I would like to be normal and average. I can tolerate that.
Yep. You referred to yourself as old. I would never refer to yourself as old. I would say we're all older, not old. We're, we're like fine wine. We age what we age very well.
It's true. Vintage
fine wine. I saw this on your Try Not to Die website. Resilience is my middle name. Mm-hmm. And I think from hearing what you've been through and the fact that you're still sitting up and taking nourishment, mm-hmm. I think that's a testament mm-hmm. to that. What is your definition of resilience, and what resources, people, or communities have helped you develop resilience in the face of really adverse challenges?
I think it's obviously going on, but it's also giving yourself the grace to have bad days and know, okay, I'll get through it, but I need to have a bad day. I need to whine. I need to not be happy with this situation. The ultimate diagnosis, as you read in my bio, is stage 4. Stage 4 is, mm-hmm. in many cases, is not considered curable. So it's kind of there. It's this shadow, right? But you ignore it because you can't focus on it or you couldn't function, right? So we just keep going. But a big part of this is having people around you who support you, whether they're, the people who drive you to treatments, your family, your friends, your loved ones, people from afar that send cards and do all sorts of things. But, I tell people I am a cancer warrior. I'm not a patient. I'm not a survivor. I'm a warrior because it is the fight for our life. And, I have this thing on my website that says fate whispers to the warrior. You cannot withstand the storm. And the warrior responds, I am the storm. And so we are the warriors. We are in charge. Yeah. But every warrior has a tribe. And I think that's the really important thing that we all need to remember is getting the people around us who are going to give us the support that we need.
Yeah, and I think for any type of a loss or any type of a chronic health challenge or terminal illness diagnosis, community support and support mm-hmm. from individuals who are going to lift you up, that are going to, provide encouragement when you're having a bad day. That is, I think, the key to getting through any challenge.
Yep.
And as a former therapist working with individuals with substance use disorder, the combination of both competent therapy and a competent 12-step support group helping individuals embrace a life of recovery better than probably either one of those alone. So right. The importance of community support is just so key. Plus, it allows us to connect to something greater than ourselves,
right.
which contributes to greater spiritual awareness. And we can't talk about transcending trauma, Deb, without talking about spiritual awareness. I mean, the two of them go hand in hand, or how we cultivated spiritual awareness.
Right. Well, and everybody says it's something different, right? Because it is. For every person is something different. For many people, it is truly their faith in God or a higher power like that. And that's, that's fine. For others, it's knowing that we kind of have this community around us. I have my supporters, that are here, but I also have what I call my angels, the people who have passed, who are still watching over me. And it's funny, I actually have symbols for all of them in a tattoo on my arm that recently got updated because my mother passed away 4 weeks ago. So I now have my mother on my arm, which she would be thoroughly annoyed at. But then it's, you know, we have to have kind of this belief that there is a reason why we are here and why we are going through what we're going through.
And first of all, please accept my condolences for the passing of your mother.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And secondly, the show and tell portion of the podcast. Do you want to, for those who are going to see us on YouTube?
I can show it. So here it is. So it does say warrior. Mm-hmm. And so you can see kind of the various things. And out here on the end is the sunflower because my mother was from Kansas. Mm-hmm. And it's still in the itchy owie stage because it is still very new. But it is here on my forearm because I can feel it and see it when I'm at the doctor, when I'm in the hospital. I can reach mm-hmm. out, and I actually, a lot of times without even realizing it, I'll have my hand on it. And drawing strength from it. And I think that's the other thing is we have to draw strength from wherever we get our strength.
Mm-hmm. And that could be from those individuals in our tribe mm-hmm. that are living.
Right.
And those individuals who in our tribe who are transitioned. Mm-hmm. I call it transitioned
mm-hmm. right.
mm-hmm. ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's wherever we seek that inspiration mm-hmm. from.
Yep.
A good friend of mine said it. You know, whatever you can take inspiration from, it's all good.
Right.
If you take inspiration from a meatball, then he said, worship the meatball, you know?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I like meatballs. You know, that's one of my favorite mm-hmm. foods mm-hmm. to eat. You draw strength from whatever is going to speak to you.
Right, right. You know, and to know that we're not alone. And I think that is one of the most challenging things is, you know, clearly when we're having treatment, we are the ones who hurt. I mean, all of those various mm-hmm. things. That is what we're doing alone. But it is how everyone else supports us that does get us through it. I had a friend contact me the other day, and she said, well, I've been diagnosed. She told me what it was. And I responded with things I can't say on this program because I'm that person. I am not the, oh, you'll get through this. I'm the one that swears. And then I say, okay. Now we got that out of the way. Now we go on. And I think that is something that's very important is we can and should be angry at this. You know, it is something, it's very much like the stages of grief. You know, we have anger, we have denial, we have all of the five stages, and it's perfectly okay to have those. You know, and I think a lot of times we think it's, you know, we shouldn't do that. You know, that we should always be upbeat. No, there are times where I am really mad, but you know, then I go, okay, now I go on. Because we don't want to get stuck in those bad things.
We live in a society, I'm sure you can attest to this. The narrative is that in order to be fulfilled, you have to be happy. And happiness isn't the only emotion that can give us fulfillment.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's also something called genuineness, and we can't be mm-hmm. genuine, mm-hmm. I believe, unless we embrace all of our emotions, and that's good mm-hmm. and bad,
right.
because
right.
everything has yeah. something to teach us. The angry parts of us are who we are, because, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to have days where we're going to be angry. We're going to have days where we're going to be sad. That's all part of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And what we contain inside of us, all of the emotions are a microcosm of the mm-hmm. emotions that everybody experiences.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So experiencing those emotions, not only do we learn from that, but others can learn from mm-hmm. us as well, too, because
right.
and we can learn that there are actually gifts in being sad.
Right.
Some of the saddest people I know are the most compassionate mm-hmm. souls I've ever talked to.
I know. And how do you know you're happy if you didn't know you were sad? You kind of have
right.
to have both extremes.
Yeah. I mean, we can have happy moments. We can have content moments. Mm-hmm. We can have facets of happiness, but we can also experience everything else that
right.
will be in, because everything mm-hmm. is in service to us.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and And again, we have to acknowledge those. You know, when my mom passed, it was actually very sudden. One day she was at Walmart, the next day she was gone. I mean, it was just kind of one of those things. But it was exactly the way she would have wanted it. It was fast. It was relatively painless. She had a massive heart attack. And I told people, I said, you understand that she was in control until the very end. And that was very important to her. But, you know, it was exactly what she wanted. And I tell people, you know, if you really want to know what my mother is like, she had written down on a form everything she wanted for her service years ago. She planned, right? Actually made my life a lot easier. But she had the music that she wanted played. And one of them was the Frank Sinatra version. And she was specific about that. It had to be the Frank Sinatra version of I Did It My Way. And now, unfortunately, the church wouldn't let us play that. We were a little peeved at that. But don't we all want to be that way, right? We did it our way. And that's the thing that we need to be doing.
Yeah, we have to live our lives. We have to walk our life paths through, and we have to see those through our own eyes and not through the eyes of anybody else. And
right.
When we can do that, I think it's the key to empowerment.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or at least one of the keys to empowerment.
That's how we're in control. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, because I think that's the other thing is we feel, especially during a lot of this, that we are not the ones in control. And so we need to take back that control and take back that power.
Absolutely, because any type of, I think, a chronic illness, a life-threatening illness, or experiencing grief due to the transition or mm-hmm. passing or death of a loved one, those are disempowering events. Mm-hmm. We feel out of control. So any way we can take back control, mm-hmm. even if it's like for shutting off your phone for 10 minutes, mm-hmm. and meditating. And
right. Going to hug a tree.
Going to hug a tree. Showing grace to yourself, as you mentioned, which is so important. Mm-hmm. Anything that you can do out of your day to do that is empowering and helps mm-hmm. us kind of take back control during times where things seem out of control.
Right, right. You know, and when you're in, say, the infusion room and it's chaos, there's everybody, you know, it's so important to think, okay, this moment is going to pass, you know, and I am the one that's in charge. And, you know, I tell people, you know, if you really want to see what life is like, go sit for an hour in an infusion room, you know, and now at my oncologist's office, they have about 20 chairs. So they're, you know, there are times it gets real busy. They do not treat children, and you know there's a variety of reasons for that. But you're going to see adults in a lot of different situations, and your problems and your issues get pretty small pretty fast.
As you were talking about this, I was thinking about something I tell my students in my death, dying, and bereavement class. And you know my history with my mm-hmm. daughter. My mm-hmm. daughter yes. mm-hmm. Janine transitioned. Mm-hmm. over 21 years ago due to alveolar rhabdomyosarcoma, which are very rare and
extremely
aggressive.
Extremely rare. Mm-hmm.
Connective muscle tissue mm-hmm. cancer. And she transitioned 10 months after giving birth to her only mm-hmm. daughter, Brianna. Mm-hmm. And I tell the female students in my class, if your dad ever goes, really gets upset because you come home and you tell him he's pregnant, he thinks it's the end of the world mm-hmm. that his life is over. Mm-hmm. Give him my number. Have him call me.
Right.
And tell him, mm-hmm. I'll sit down and say, you think I got a story? Hold my mm-hmm. beer and mm-hmm. sit yeah. and listen. I said, by the time I'm done with mm-hmm. him, he's going to be hugging you like he's never hugged you before.
He should be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I'll feel pitiful. And I feel pitiful every day. I mean, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. But I'll be, you know, in that little pity party spot and a commercial for St. Jude's Cancer Center for Children will come on mm-hmm. or Wounded Warriors. And I tell you what, either one of those, I have to do is see those. And I think, oh, honey, you have nothing to complain about. I can't imagine losing a child. That's just, you know, unbelievable. And the pain is incredible.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I said this on another podcast, my worst tragedy was the transition of my daughter. Mm-hmm. But just because I've experienced my worst tragedy, mm-hmm. I can still meet somebody at their worst tragedy, regardless right. of loss, because mm-hmm. I can tap into the pain mm-hmm. yeah. of what that was like for me to experience mm-hmm. my worst loss. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, there's commonality.
Mm-hmm. Right. And everybody's worst loss is different. You Absolutely. Know, and I catch Absolutely. Myself sometimes because I'll think, really, they think that's important. And then I'm like, no, they do. Mm-hmm. And so I need to honor that they think it's important.
Yeah. And we do. And if mm-hmm. we all learn to do that, the world would be a better place.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely.
Tell our listeners more about Try Not to Die. What resources do you provide? Who are the individuals that you serve? I know you serve a variety of different right. individuals with your resources. Right. Mm-hmm. So tell us more about.
Well, thank you. The name comes from my mother, right? She came out when I was very ill, and I ended up, you know, I was in critical care for quite a long time, and I'm an only child. So she, of course, came out to be there and to help. And one of the times, you know, when one of the wonderful medical people came in and did something and left, I got the mother look. And I went, what? And she said, you did not say thank you. And I said, oh, for God's sakes, Mom, I'm trying to not die. You know, and she, that was not an excuse for her. You know, that was, and so then when my business coach was telling me, you know, you need to do this, you need to help others. We thought, okay, it needs to be Trying Not to Die. Now, I'm a marketing person, so it was going to be tryingnottodie.com. It's taken. How rude, right? And so I discovered that tryingnottodie.live, so that is the website address, tryingnottodie.live was available. And that was perfect, right? And the concept is that when we have something happening to us, we get so focused on trying to not die that we forget that we have to live. And I don't care if it's 5 minutes, 50 years, whatever, we have to continue living, you know, and just making sure that we do that. And so we started this initiative, and it's, you know, we serve three different groups of people. One is, you know, and of course the information we have is good for anybody, but we focus on those who have cancer and are thinking, what the heck? Right. You know, I went to Dr. Google and got overwhelmed. And I tell people, okay, stop that. No. You know, the resources I use are the Mayo Clinic and the American Cancer Society. And then you can kind of branch out from there. But, you know, start with that. And we help them through that process. What questions should they be asking their medical team? What should they be considering? Because, you know, it's long gone are the days when it was the very traditional medicine of surgery, chemo, radiation, whatever those combinations are. Now I think it's important to at least explore, you know, what are the alternatives? You know, nutrition is obviously huge in this whole process. Meditation, yoga, you know, you might do acupuncture. You might choose to do totally non-traditional, but it's your choice. You know, as long as you researched it, that's the important thing, to make sure that you made a knowledgeable decision. And then we help with that process. You know, how can we help them? And, you know, it's, we do have lots of different resources on the website, always adding more. But we also have a Facebook group that is a private group, but it's only private just to keep out the people who are going to cure us. Because I've had those. They meant well, but I'm like, no, you're not going to cure me. You might make me feel better, or they, but no, you're not going to cure me. But then we also work with people who are the support system, you know, the tribe members. They're the people who come to me and say, my mother, brother, sister, coworker was just diagnosed and I don't know what to do. And then what happens is, because they don't know what to do, and it's very much like with grief, right? I don't know what to say to them because I don't want to make it worse. And so they don't say anything, and we think, they don't love us. It's not that. It's that they really don't know what to say or do. And So one of the things I tell people is be specific. Don't say, hey, Dave, tell me what you need whenever, and I'm happy to help. Because your brain is never going to wrap around what you need. But if I say, Dave, can I bring you dinner next Thursday? You're going to say yes or no. And, you know, and then we can go from there. You know, I don't like, you know, Thursday doesn't work, but how about Saturday? Okay, what do you want? I can't do spicy, you know. And again, you're back in control, right? You know, or say things like maybe they have small children. Can I come take your kids to the zoo today? Can I take them to a movie? Can I take you for a walk? You know, anything like that. Give them something specific to latch their heads onto. And for the people who tell me I didn't know what to say, I tell them, you know, Hallmark has cards. And I have all my cards. I actually still have all of the cards that people sent 8 years ago that, you know, at some point, I don't know, I'll probably have to throw them away. But right now, they're still treasures. And then we also work with the medical care providers to show them how to treat us as people and not patients. And it's very challenging. I tell people our caregivers are our true superheroes, you know, and especially in the medical field, because they are dealing minute after minute after minute with catastrophic, horrible things. And they have to protect their own emotions or they'd fall apart. But they sometimes then get cold and distant. I tell students that I've worked with, you know, treat me like you want your mother treated. And it there's an immediate shift in what they want to do. One of the times when I went for a checkup last year, I was the thyroid cancer in room 4. And I went out and I said, excuse me, I am not the thyroid cancer in room 4. I said, now I understand you can't call out my name. There's these HIPAA rules. I said, but please don't ever just associate me with what my diagnosis is. And they apologized. Now, I'm pretty sure that the next person who was in that room, they did the same thing too. But yeah, it's all about exactly how do we take control back? How do we show that we are what's important and not cancer?
Exactly. And it's also being aware of the person's entire needs. You are just not a diagnosis.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You are your person, and you have specific name.
Right.
You have qualities that have endeared you to others. You are not your diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And even if they did something like, you know, dub in room 4, that's not violating anybody's confidentiality.
Yeah, because they didn't give enough information that you could go, ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or even if they say, look, you know, I'm not going to refer to you as a thyroid cancer in room 4, but here's going to be the name that I'm going to use. I'm going to use something like, you know, Jill, or do initials like JR or something.
Yeah.
So this way that maintains a confidentiality and preserves your dignity. We don't need to be reminded of our diagnosis.
Right. Yeah. Because we are far more than that.
Absolutely. And I've said that about individuals who are diagnosed with alcohol use disorder or drug use disorder. They are more than their diagnosis. That's a behavior. A series of behaviors that are associated with that. Yeah. It's a label.
Yeah. You know, they get labeled as alcoholic, addict, you know, all of those various things. And then you feel like that's all you are. And you can't get out of that.
Yeah.
And of course, especially with someone who has an issue with alcohol or drugs, you know, once they feel that they can't get out of it, then they can't.
Yeah. There was a time that I looked at myself as a bereaved parent. But it's very easy to just look at yourself from that label because the major life-altering event at that time was a transition of my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But as I grew and as I did more grief work and as I worked with some very wise individuals along the way, I learned that I was more than a bereaved parent. I had other categories.
Mm-hmm.
And then I flipped the perspective from being simply a bereaved parent to a parent who has experienced the transition of a child.
Mm-hmm.
So that transition, though it is an integral part of my experience, is part of the total experience of who I am as a human being.
Right.
And with such an emphasis on categorization and labels that have permeated, you know, Western culture for as long as I can remember, we need to be aware that we are more than our labels.
Right. Right. You know, and all of those things exist. You will always be a bereaved parent. And I'm assuming that every day there's something about your daughter that you think about, especially when you look at your granddaughter, right? Mm-hmm. And you probably think, gosh, you know, she's not here to see this. Isn't that horrible? But then you go look at this gift that she gave us. And, you know, and so, yeah, it's acknowledging that bad and then moving on to whatever's next.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just learning to be grateful for who I have in my life and what I have as opposed to what I don't have.
Right.
And, you know, 21 years into my path as having been a parent has experienced a transition of a child. There are days that I go there that I say, boy, I wish Janine could be here. But it's all part of the yearning that I know I'm going to experience, but I know what to expect with that, because then I know how to manage it. And I accept it as part of my human experience for the rest of my life. So,
right.
Another question I have, and being a cancer survivor, and I know you're still going through some ongoing treatment, but you are a cancer survivor. You're a cancer
I was
warrior.
From the day they gave me the diagnosis.
You got it. You did that. You did not buy into the fact that your diagnosis was terminal. How has being a cancer survivor influenced your assumptions about the world and changed your values and priorities?
Hopefully it's softened the edges. Now, if you ask some people, they probably would disagree with that. But it has definitely made me more appreciative of things. You know, it's funny. I tell my friends, now only when it's authentic, right? Because that is one of the, you know, I love them. And before then, oh no, you wouldn't have done that. And it's funny because my mom and I, when we would talk on the phone, she always ended up the call with love you. And I'd go love you. And it was just kind of this thing that you threw out there, right? As opposed to, you know, I really love you. It's the tone, right? But it's also the meaning behind it. So I think I appreciate things like that more. I do hope that I look at things and go, you know, that's really not as important as you know, I'm thinking it might be. Let's kind of let that slide. And, you know, now, do you do it all the time? No. You know, there are times I'm like, seriously, you cut me off in traffic. But, you know, it's also made me think these are not people I want in my life, right? The toxic people. And whether it's, you know, turning off the TV, turning off your phone, not reading social media, or not actually communicating with certain people, or only doing it to the, you know, to the absolute minimum that you can, we can't surround ourselves with those people. And, you know, I can feel bad for them, but I don't need to be around that negative energy. You know, and like I said, I feel bad for them, but no, just not going to go there. Now, do you want to? Yeah, we all kind of like going and gossiping and doing those things. And there are times where we still fall into that. But, you know, I do hope that all of this has made me a better person. You know, do we slide? Sure. But it's something that you do. And I also am very cognizant of the fact that my expiration date, you know, is probably a lot shorter than I thought it was 10 years ago. And so you can't put things off. You know, it's not the, well, I'll do that whenever. No, you can't, you know, obviously you can't do something right away. But maybe think about, you know, I want to take that big trip. Let's start saving for it now, as opposed to after we do this and after we do that. You or maybe you change. It's like, okay, well, I can't go on this Caribbean cruise, but I'm going to go to the local gardens and see the flowers. You know, and so just kind of think about those things. But yeah, don't put it off. I mean, we all don't want to be the people that on our headstone, it says, gee, I wish I would have. You know, do it or do a variation of it.
I think that's a great perspective to have given the challenges you've experienced. I think I would look at that the exact same way. And I've always believed that whether you are a survivor of cancer or you know somebody who has transitioned with cancer, for the survivors, they go through a very similar assumptive world restructuring than as individuals who are like myself who are dealing with catastrophic loss. And I think when you have something of that magnitude that is that life-altering, it has to shift your perspective. Mm-hmm. I don't see how it couldn't.
No.
Because there wouldn't be any growth otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Right. And unfortunately, we see it shift people negative, right? Mm-hmm. They become very cynical and those things. And it is hard. I mean, you know, I tell people, you always think every time you get in the shower, am I going to find a lump? Or what is that cough? Mm-hmm. You know, and so that shadow is always there. Even if you are completely considered cured, it's still there. I got one of the best text messages the other day from a friend of mine. And all she said was, I'm in remission. You know, and I thought, wow. I mean, it took my breath away. I was driving. But she will always still think, is it coming back? What is this? Mm-hmm. So we do kind of live with that little specter, but we can't let it take over what we're doing.
No. And I think with that knowledge, knowing that certainly our mortality is not guaranteed from day to day.
I could get hit by a bus tomorrow.
Absolutely. So you'll learn to live your life to the fullest mm-hmm. every day you have. Mm-hmm. I wake up every day and thank the good Lord for giving me another day where I can sit up and take nourishment because that day is not a given for me. I could, so I don't take anything for granted anymore. Mm-hmm. I look at every day, how can I make this my best mm-hmm. day? Particularly if it's going to be my last day on mm-hmm. earth, how can I make it my best day?
Mm-hmm. Are you going to get to the pearly gates and go, well, darn.
Yeah. Well, darn. Geez, I missed an opportunity to mm-hmm. make every day the best day of my life. Mm-hmm. And by the way, dinner next Thursday is good for me.
Okay.
You can bring pecan pie, though. Pecan pie.
Of course. I am in Georgia.
Well, heck, just shop by the Red Eye. Come to Utica. You know, mm-hmm. Take a look. We got snow yesterday.
It is 81 here.
Thanks. I don't think we've had a total of 81 degrees all week. So,
but it's also pollen season. So you have snow. We have pollen.
I'll take the pollen at this point because at least I could take some allergy medicine for that. But anyway, Deb, if you're going to leave our audience with one thing today, what would be that one thing you would want to leave us with today?
Well, first, thank you so much for allowing me the honor of being on the program. I think we've had a great discussion and hopefully we've helped people. I tell people, you are the one in charge. You know, you get to decide your path. You get to decide what treatment you're going to have or not have. And you need to make sure that it goes the way you want. You also need to make sure that somebody else knows that, because sometimes you can't be your own advocate. So make sure somebody else knows what you want, you know, what your wishes are. But yeah, you're in charge. Cancer's not in charge. Your doctors aren't in charge. Nobody's in charge. It's you. You are the warrior, but build that supportive tribe around you.
That is great advice, Deb. And one last question.
Mm-hmm.
How can people get in touch with you?
It's pretty easy. You go to the website, www.tryingnottodie.live, and you'll find the contact form there, and you'll also find the link to our Facebook page.
Wonderful. And I'll make sure all of that gets in the program notes when the podcast is released, both on RSS and YouTube.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Deb, with that, thank you so much for being a valued guest contributor today on the Teaching Journeys podcast. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. So with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.